just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
The Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you do that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Have yeah, to absolutely, because I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no.
Alrighty, good people of Internetlandia, and welcome back to Oh Really Radio Show 107. This is part B, so the second half of the show where we're going to talk about this week in SCOTUS, some good ideas, some bad ideas, and then our personal picks. So let's get right into it. Let's see, this week in SCOTUS, something happened. Something bad happened. Top Republican floats Cruz, Ted Cruz, as a Supreme Court pick. And I have you guys muted. There you go.
That's not going to sit well with the pizza.
It's not going to sit well with the pizza?
Yeah, no. That's ominous news.
Oh, you just ate pizza. I'm sorry. I was not watching you.
that just wants to come right back up.
There's video, but I don't think I want to play it because that could just be again vomit inducing. So it was let's see, who was it? House Majority Whip Steve Scalzi, Republican out of Louisiana, laid out the idea during an interview on Fox Business Network when he asked about the possibility of Donald Trump and Cruz uniting on a White House ticket. Quote, I think it's possible, whether it's Trump or Cruz, or, you know, Cruz could be the Scalia replacement. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
I'm going to go ahead and straight up declare nope on this one.
It's a pile of nope. On aboard the nope train.
Toot toot.
Toot toot. Yeah.
All aboard the train to Nopesville.
Yeah. I mean, it's just rampant speculation. Again, nope. They haven't looked at anybody, have they? They're still completely stonewalling on that, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they still refuse to have any sort of meeting.
They absolutely say that the next president should be the one to pick the Supreme Court Justice.
And only if he's Republican.
If they can't get their way, they're just going to not do their jobs.
They take their ball and go home because they're children.
But this is incredible what we're seeing in this day and age, because beforehand, there was at least you got on the floor and you called each other names. Now they're just not even doing the job.
Yeah. Not stalling at all. And they're not even having like a nice pretense about it. You know, I could see them, you know, just going through the motions. Like, yeah, it's fine. No problem. Yeah, we'll have all the hearings. And in secret, it's like, no, we're not going to do any damn thing. But no, they're doing it all in the open.
Yeah,
no, this is all changed. I mean, just remember, you know, the Republican House and Senate under Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Compare it to where it is now. Entirely different. Might as well be two different countries.
Seems like it. Feels like it.
Because at least that Congress did stuff. Well, it wasn't necessarily good stuff, but they did stuff.
Yeah, agreed.
The problem with that was it actually laid the groundwork for what screwed the Democrats later, because the Democrats remembered, hey, when we controlled everything, we were in control of the House and the Senate, we had a Democratic president in office, you know, you guys still worked with us, we got things done, there was compromise and things were great. They figured that that was going to be the continuation, you know, the status quo from that point on, and then Bush got elected, and then they took control, and then they basically told the Democrats to piss off and we'll do whatever the hell we want and screw you.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. For those of you not on video, I now have a cat. Sprocket has decided to take his customary place on my shoulder for a few minutes.
The podcast has returned.
Until he's completely fed up with me and then moves along.
So. On another note of Ted Cruz note, you heard that he has named Carly Fiorina as his preferred VP pick.
Yeah.
Without receiving the nomination first.
Which leads me to kind of, where's my tinfoil hat? Yeah, it's over there. It kind of leads me down the line of, what does he think he knows that the rest of us are not included on? You know, is the fix in?
No, I don't think the fix is in. No, this is, I think this was a calculated choice to make him look more appealing to the female voters.
Well, I suppose it's slightly better than a paper bag over his head, but not by much.
Put the reddest of red hats on, mm-hmm. and go, well, where's Trump weak? Women. Obviously women. How do I get women? Have a woman.
But he's... No, I can't see anything about him, you know, no. None of that makes any sense to me. Sprocket, yeah, no, you can't scratch your head on my microphone. That clearly doesn't work, but, you know, he's loving life. He's loving life. I did want to talk a little bit about that and, you know, the whole woman card thing. Because there is having a female contender that is, you know, in all likelihood, you know, I mean, let's face it, in all likelihood, she's probably going to win, has really skewed the whole demographic and the arguments and really all the talking points. You know, Trump had called her out on, had called out Hillary and said something about a woman card. I didn't pay any attention to it really on purpose. Because that's not my bag. Not that I'm not a feminist. I just try not to listen to the things that he says.
Fair.
Because they're all bad. But she did go ahead and I believe she's actually printing out woman cards now. So for a donation, you can get your own woman card. So way to own it, I must say. You know, turn that right back around. Like, you know.
There's owning it, and then there's ways that this could be interpreted both positively for her and negatively for her. And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of times with her campaigns, current and past, they don't test all the waters before going through with the next idea. It's more like, well, you like it, I like it, let's do it.
Yeah, the campaign has been rather disjointed and not, it doesn't have like a consistent theme. She has definitely gone from the I to the we lately, which was always, you know, in all the debates and, you know, many of the ones that we went through, she was all about what she has done personally. It was a very personal campaign for her. And for Bernie, you know, her only real competition in the world, it was always we. It was always a movement of many. So
I actually have some social science behind this.
Uh-oh.
The usage of I is what is purported to be used most often if you want to be hired in doing interviews. The people in HR just eat up somebody who uses I and no qualifiers. Makes you seem very confident. It makes you seem competent. It makes you seem like your leadership material when you just constantly refer I. Not we, not me, not anything else, just I. And it's been something that's been studied for a while now in interview science. So
interview science.
That's yeah, it's a thing.
Like many things.
But it is something that pulls well with people in HR. It's something that you hear often when you're going for any sort of seminar in doing interviews. So it sounds like one of these guys in your campaign pretty much went, you're interviewing for being the president. Use I.
The problem with that, and the problem that her entire campaign has, is that that has been an establishment tactic for years. And as this election cycle is proving, the up-and-coming generation of new voters hates that. We don't trust the establishment anymore, and we don't trust their tactics. We're fucking tired of their bullshit. We hate that now.
Hasn't Trump been using we?
And so now that now that she's doing this thing where she's essentially parroting everything that Bernie's doing, that was another thing that the establishment doesn't get, and it's on both sides of the table. Republicans are really bad at it, but apparently Clinton is falling to the same problem of the establishment doesn't realize that the internet's a thing.
Yeah.
They don't get that the election cycle doesn't work the way it did the last couple times they ran. So because she could have pulled this crap back in the day and no one would have noticed, because there weren't literally millions of people pointing out that, hey, you're being a hypocrite right now. And it's everywhere. The instant she says something, it hits the internet and flies on its own.
Yeah, it's the era of the instant fact check.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's and definitely it changing.
Killing her.
It's definitely Join changing the landscape. I wouldn't say that it's killing her, because she's winning.
She's still winning. Though, again, a lot of things that have just been going on with this specific election, all the voter suppression, all the questionable things, I don't know if this always happened and we just didn't hear about it because we had an entire news cycle.
I've been looking into this, and yes, it's definitely coming up more because, again, we're in the age of instant information. But yeah. No. It's especially bad this year. There's always shady business. There's always some things that fall through the cracks. But no, this is bad. This cannot be a coincidence. It's that bad. It's everywhere on both sides of the line. And with the system, with it being that bad, I don't call Hillary winning because she's cheating. The DNC is cheating. They are winning through forcing the election, because this election cycle is not above board. It is not clean and fair. So no, she's not winning, because I've seen a lot of speculation about out there of if all of these mysterious things hadn't happened, the margin would either be too close to call or she'd be solidly losing. There's no way to know for certain, but the point is that that's how bad it is. That's how shady it is. And that is how hard that the Clintons and their buddy in the DNC are trying to suppress the will of the people.
It's probably going to be one of those things that we're never going to find out.
We're never going to get the entirety of it.
Yeah, we'll get speculation, just like how we, who killed Kennedy? You know, things along that line. You know, we're
the
not...
hanging Chad situation here back the first time Junior was elected.
And there's been so much just with the primary system here that all the curtains have been torn down. We see all the men behind the curtain, you know, pulling all the levers and making things happen. You know, we're getting an awful lot more of that, and I don't know what 4 years from now is going to look like, because the primary system is broken. I mean, we see it very clearly now.
Yeah.
We couldn't have seen it last time because, you know, we had a sitting president that, you know, he was running. So there was really no primary, you know, there wasn't a primary for Obama, was there? In the midterm?
No.
No, he's going to move on. Yeah,
no, he's the incumbent.
Yeah, the incumbent.
Just
yeah, no, nobody bothers, essentially, at that point. So in 4 years, we're going to have an incumbent. So we're not going to see everything. So we are uniquely positioned where both sides are, you know, we're looking up their skirts, basically, on this whole thing and seeing all the business. Yeah, it's glorious for us podcasters and pundits and people that like to watch all of this madness. But man, it's weird. It's so weird.
I'd rather not have it be this glorious for us podcasters. I'd rather it be boring and all above board.
But it's never been all above board. Because we know what caucuses are now. We really, really know. And they've been crooked from the beginning, and they like it that way.
Of course they like it that way. And
Make everything primaries, make everything open primaries, and be done with it.
Yeah. At least now we do have California and Oregon are now automatic voting registration.
And California is an open primary.
Yes. But I don't know that those are going to work for this election cycle. So, we're going to have a lot of incremental changes that, you know, yes, this has revealed them for next time. A lot of that's going to be, it's for next time. And all the changes that we've seen have to happen with the local primaries. And, you know, it's like, wow, that was a complete botch job. Don't worry. We'll have it fixed by the general election. That doesn't mean we're going to do anything about the results now. No. Yeah. We can't do anything about that now. No, it's already done. And that feels really shady. But
Well, of course it's shady. And everyone,
but I have to remind everyone
hates it.
Well, not everybody.
Well, I think definitely not everybody. A big fan.
Everybody in the general population hates it because every time they pull one of those, they practically have riots in the streets. Thousands upon thousands of people turn out to say that this is crap.
And the cameras never show them.
But the internet knows.
Again.
Yes, but
CNN, Fox, they don't cover it.
Until,
of course they don't, but they're already in a losing battle because they know it. Just like newspaper is a dying industry, so too is mainstream media, because with the internet, you can get all your information with a Google search.
Again,
they're dying and they know it.
Unfortunately, the Fourth Estate has crumbled completely, in my opinion, over the last 10 years.
Really, in my opinion, the media as a whole didn't begin to crumble until the advent of Fox News. That when Fox News actually came onto the field, and CNN actually had a competitor.
When it became entertainment.
Yeah, that's it. When it became
about ratings and not news.
Yeah. And when there was so many. It's actually the 24-hour news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Once you had to fill airtime, you had to invent stories that were out of whole cloth. Because there wasn't anything really newsworthy going on. So instead, we're going to watch, you know, the O.J. Simpson trial 24 hours a day.
But maybe get some weather. Even then, in the early 90s, when it was just that starting of the 24-hour news cycle,
mm-hmm.
Again, CNN and C-SPAN, those were the only horses in town.
Yeah.
C-SPAN really hasn't changed.
Right. But, so now we have a lot of competitors for the space, and they can't afford to do the hard journalism.
No, that doesn't get ratings.
No. Well, not only that, but then if they take somebody to task for it, they're never going to get the second interview. And they have to have the second interview to fill the airtime, to compete with the other people.
With excessive privatization. You know, it's the same problem that we have.
And they don't want NPR, do they?
Thematically, it's the same problem we have with privatization in healthcare. It's a profit point.
Yeah.
You know, human lives are a profit point when you privatize healthcare. Well, news is a profit point when you privatize the media. So they're not reporting truth. Nothing is fair and balanced. It's all crap.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly as you've said it. Okay, so how about that? That was a big long tangent, but valuable conversation from a non-story on This Week in SCOTUS. So let's move into good ideas. I'm still working on some new bumpers for the new lineup here, so we're just going to go into it and ignore it as we go. So Obama has announced new steps to curb gun violence. He did that, I believe, today. I don't know that it's really going to do a whole lot. It's essentially around smart guns and advocating their technology use. I'm not sure it has any teeth at all.
This is going to be fought so hard against by the NRA. It's probably going to die in the background and no one's going to know about it.
Yeah. President Barack Obama announced new steps today to help curb gun violence, including by identifying the requirements that smart guns would have to meet would have to meet for law enforcement. Okay. I'm sorry. This is not my grammar. This is the grammar of the article, and it's poor. It's rough.
Editor,
okay. Yeah, there was no editing on this copy. Okay. Anyway, smart gun requirements would have to be met by law enforcement agencies to buy and use them, as well as sharing mental health records with the federal background check system. Again, that entire paragraph doesn't make any sense. But I believe what we can parse out of that is that they are going to require smart guns for law enforcement. I think that's what that's about. In addition, there's going to be new revised stringencies on mental health records along with federal background checks.
Steve, you're the guy who knows about the NRA stuff and the New Jersey law. Why don't you take it away?
I'm actually pulling up the New Jersey law right now, actually.
Okay, you do that.
Okay. While he's pulling that up, I can sort of parse in the meantime. Part of the reason why the NRA is hardcore against smart guns is because of this one New Jersey law, which would then force all guns that they could have in Jersey be smart guns.
Here we go. It is the New Jersey Childproof Handgun Law, which it is from the Assembly Bill number 700. It's a law that would make the sale of handguns illegal unless it is a smart gun that can only be fired by an authorized or recognized user. Basically, from the law that passed in December 23rd, 2002, is when it was put in, it provides a timetable for implementation. Specifically, and this is quoted from the Wikipedia article on this, the amended bill specifies that 3 years after it is determined that personalized handguns are available for retail purposes, it will be illegal for any registered or licensed firearm manufacturer or dealer to transport, sell, expose for sale, possess for sale, assign, or transfer any handgun unless that handgun is a personalized handgun.
But smart guns already exist.
The technology exists.
No, the technology exists, but it's not out there for retail purposes yet.
No, it's there.
You can get it.
They've been manufacturing them.
You can get them. They're really hard to get because the NRA is trying to suppress them as hard as they can. But there's still a market for it.
You don't see like Beretta and Colt and everybody else manufacturing these. When they try, the NRA slams down on it, and they use the New Jersey law as a reason why.
Well, it's a reason for them to do it, but it's not a reason to actually prevent them from doing it. To prevent them from doing it is, I don't think that the big manufacturers have any desire to do so. Because then they would have to build a more complex firearm. And, you know, it's the firearm manufacturers that are, you know, funneling money into the NRA, and the NRA is the biggest lobbyist on Capitol Hill. Tons of money. Lots and lots of money coming out of the NRA. And for those of you that have been living under a rock for the last, I don't know, your entire life, NRA is for the National Rifle Association.
Which, in truth, used to be a very good organization.
Used to be fantastic. Lots of gun safety, you know, entire training requirements.
People like Wayne LaPierre got a hold of it.
Yeah, he's a bad, bad man. He's a bad man. So
bad.
But this is a good thing, because now he's basically forcing their hand. It's not about, you know, having them for retail, you know, and now I don't know. Maybe there's just nothing to it. Yeah. It's going to be fought again.
I don't see this having any teeth. I really don't.
The Defense Department will continue to help manufacturers test smart firearms under real-world conditions at the U.S. Army Aberdeen Test Center in Maryland. Gun makers could also be eligible to win cash prizes through the program. The government will also continue to help state and local governments as smart gun technology develops, the report said. I'm completely in favor of smart guns, and especially, knowing that law is out there, I'm doubly in favor of it. I think that'd be a great thing. Now we just have to have enough groundswell to actually make it happen. because there have been several firearm manufacturers, usually upstarts. They're not, you know, well-established firearms manufacturers. No. They're more the boutique and, you know, agencies out there that are, you know, doing one-offs and small niche firearms. But, yeah, they're... We had a story back, I think it was in our first year doing the podcast, where there was a firearm manufacturer. They made a smart gun. It worked, and they were working on putting them in gun stores, and the owner of the gun store was then threatened, and they were gone overnight. So that was, yeah, that's pretty much been consistently how it is. Terrible stuff. Well, and that wasn't a good idea. Boy, we really know how to pick them, don't we? Okay. I guess there's always a bad sign when we deal with the NRA. Now, in some possibly good news, this guy, John Laurentis, he came up with a way that Bernie still has a chance to win. Because we've been looking at the numbers. It is, I believe, a very narrow path to victory, I believe would be a generous statement. Do you agree?
Yeah. Sadly, yes, but the path to victory is still possible.
It's kind of narrow, yeah. Now, this article, and you can find the link in our show notes, can Sanders do it, or is Clinton truly inevitable? Essentially, this says that, you know, if all goes according to plan, it's going to end up being a brokered convention. Well, not brokered convention, contested. Is that what the contested. what's the verbiage that they use in these days?
Contested, brokered. I hear both.
Yeah, I guess it's brokered on the Republican side. Whatever that means. Yeah, I'm still hazy on that whole nomenclature. Anywho, this guy he went out to another webpage. This is called the Green Papers, and if you have a chance and are really politically minded, go take a look at thegreenpapers.com. They really itemize out exactly how these votes are coming in and what to expect. It's dense. And very before Web 2.0, it's not a good-looking website, but it's filled with data. Tons and tons of data.
My eyes are bleeding.
Oh, you just went?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not pretty. In fact, here, for the viewers at home, green.
Oh.
And yeah, it's not a pretty page. It's
painful.
Basically a table. But it does have tons of information. And that's just this one page. Actually, go out to the main page, and then you'll see really how terrible it can be. Yeah.
Ah!
That's what I'm staring at.
Yeah, there you go. Let me see if I can zoom in a little bit here so that we can see just how good it is. Oh, yeah. We were blogging before it was cool. And you've never changed your web page design. Let me tell you, it's
and you've never gotten with the times.
No, it's pretty bad.
That's rough.
Yeah, it is just dense with information. Dense. So if you're looking for something, I would go to the Green Papers and suffer through it. It's good. But anyway, back to the analysis of this. Yeah, let's yeah. I know it's a groan. Oh, it's bad. essentially, he goes through the math. I mean, it's simple arithmetic, you know, and then just coming up with some percentages based on how it is. He's going to end up with enough delegates to force the hand. Let's see, at the very end.
To force it being a contested convention.
Yeah. Let's see, where was it? Part two, why Sanders will win according to math. Let's see. Okay. Actually, this is more important. Why Clinton will not secure the nomination, according to math. According to the Green Papers, Clinton stands today, April 28th, with 1,664 pledged delegates, while Sanders has gathered 1,371. The amount of delegates needed to secure the nomination is 2,383. And if you'll pardon me for using, for my use of arithmetic, I will now demonstrate why that number is hopelessly out of reach for the Clinton campaign. Hillary needs 719 more delegates to reach the 2,383 number. That's just, you know, simple arithmetic there. Actually, let me see if I can zoom in a little bit for, again, the viewers at home. Okay. Now, the pledged delegates that are available to grab in the remaining states all together amount to 1,016. And in order to attain that blessed number, Clinton will have to win an average of 70% of the remaining states. So, and then he's got the arithmetic again for how he came up with that. You might be thinking that 71% is not such an unattainable number for Hillary and her powerful Wall Street backers. You might be thinking that because you'd be betting against the longer odds, longer odds than would be wise. You see, of the 1,016 delegates remaining, 475 of those delegates are to be won in California alone. California, which has a semi-open primary, I'm not sure, semi-open.
That's where an independent can decide whether or not they are going Republican or Democrat, right?
If you're part of the one, if you're part of one of the two parties, you vote for the two parties. If you are not one of the two parties, you get to vote for, choose which one you want to vote for.
Yeah, a fully open primary would be anybody can vote anybody however they like.
Correct.
Okay, so in this, the independents get to choose. If you've already locked yourself into a part. To a party, then you have to go along those lines. So that would be...
This allows independents to vote and go, yeah, we want the Democratic guy, or hey, we want the Republican guy.
Okay. So that... I like that system better, really. Okay. California, where Clinton is polling at a mere 49% and he gives a link out... where does it send us to? Send us out to Real Clear Politics, so it's a viable source. In California, where Clinton's support has been declining as Sanders' campaign gains visibility and momentum, California, that ace that Sanders, as much as the media, have concealed up his sleeve. I have been waiting for California to come down.
Oh, yes.
Desperately. I want to know what's going to happen. It's basically at that point that I'm going to be drinking heavily. Yeah, I'm going to be drinking heavily that night, probably.
Maybe might be drinking heavily the next day.
Yeah, is that a Tuesday?
I believe so.
It's usually a Tuesday. I might want to take Wednesday off. And maybe we should live stream it or something. Okay.
Oh, I'm up for that.
Okay, good.
As long as our viewers don't mind screaming.
Yeah, well, I think they'll know what they're getting into. Okay, so it's no secret that Sanders, a previously invisible independent... okay, we know all that. He consistently climbs in the polls. He's very good with the... with the independent voters and the youth votes. Okay, so he definitely performs best in the open primaries. Okay, of the 475 delegates available in California on June 7th, that's the day we're waiting for, let's say Hillary takes 49% of those, even though she will most likely take less. That would give her 232.75 delegates, which will round up to an even 234. Next, let's add her total, her current total of 1,664, bring her up to 1,897. That's if she wins 49% of California.
California.
Okay. So then, delegates remaining after California, then she'll be at 89%, maybe 90%. Yeah. Wait, no. I'm sorry. Then she will need to get
90% of the remaining
votes. Yeah.
California votes.
90%. So essentially, the argument here goes that if she cannot handily get the right number of delegates out of the primaries before the convention, where the superdelegates will actually have to have anything to do with it. Because right now they have not voted. You know, they can pledge all they like, but until they actually cast their ballot, it doesn't matter, and they do that at the convention at the end. So, up until then, if she can't get the number, then at the convention, it's all up in the air.
It's all contested.
It will be contested at that point. No clear victor, even though that's probably when the DNC is going to play all their real shenanigans. And we'll get to see it. Because Periscope. And, you know, live blogging. And all sorts of things from people on the inside. That
phones.
Yeah.
Just phones.
Yeah, just phones. So, it goes through quite a bit here. And then there is a part two of why Sanders will win, according to math. I don't know. I think it's... This is the narrow path to victory. Lined up, quantified, made as idealistic, and even giving a little bit of leeway here and there, still having some realism. This may be what we see. This really may be what we see. So by the numbers, as long as he stays in it, it will end up being contested.
Yes.
Because she can't get a clear win. Because he'd have to die. And even then, people will vote for him.
Yeah, because the odds of her pulling far enough away are basically zero at this point.
Yeah. So he says, if you found yourself thinking, well, Sanders won't secure the nomination either, you are almost 100% right. Well, 99.6% right anyway, because if we take Sanders' current delegate total, 1,371, subtract that from the magic 2,383, then divide that by the remaining available delegates, we get 0.996. So, 99.6. So he would have to secure 99.6% of all the remaining delegates in order to win, just right out. So, No, he does not have a path to victory based solely on getting delegates out of the states. That's not where he wins. Nearly impossible. Again, Hillary would have to die, and people are still going to vote for her because people are still voting for people that dropped out of the race. So that's not going to happen at all. So let's see where it goes. Since neither of them will be securing the 2,383 needed for the nomination, let's take a look at another number that has been hiding in plain sight for too long. I'd like you to meet the number 4,051. That's the number of total pledged delegates that are available from all 50 states plus D.C., U.S. territories, and the Democrats abroad. As should be obvious, a majority of these delegates would be 2,026. That's fairly simple math, yeah. At the convention, this number is going to matter more than the unattainable 2,383 that no one will have. That being the case, let's take a look at what Bernie Sanders would have to get there if Sanders won 60% of the remaining contests, which is not unfeasible. He could win 60% of what's remaining. Definitely could. Okay, there's a bunch of math here, and it's boring for somebody to just talk about math. I learned that in math class a long time ago.
It's only boring if your math teacher isn't also the football coach and is super excited about everything.
But he was never excited about math.
No.
He was only excited about football.
No, he was excited about math. Mine wasn't. So, yeah, today we're going to do some integrals. Yeah!
I did not have that teacher.
I want that teacher. Amazing.
I did not have that teacher at all.
I would have gotten good scores in math with that teacher.
Oh, no. Okay, well, that'd be interesting, but no. Okay. So, at the convention, that's where it's going to be a big deal. A super big deal. This is dense, and it is certainly slanted, but it's looking for that path to victory. Like, why is he still in it? This is why.
Because there's a chance.
And it's not that far-fetched. So those of you out there that are being told that he doesn't have a chance. Well, there is some math that proves that he does.
It's that, yeah, you're wrong.
And here and here you go. But, you know, yeah, on the surface, yeah, it's kind of far-fetched. But as you dig down, it's, oh, well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a chance because she doesn't have the chance to get all of them. She can't just run away with it.
No.
That's the trick. She can't just run away with it. There's going to be some more action on this, which is why her entire campaign, and now she's having people like George Takei come out and try to get all the Bernie supporters over in her camp and tell him to just go away.
Yeah, that'll happen.
There's been a big push for that lately because she knows. She knows this is going to happen. The only way for her to run away with it is if he leaves and says, just vote for Hillary.
And that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, if he acquiesces, then yeah, that'll work. But he's not that kind of guy.
He's not that kind of guy, and the more that they tried this tactics, the more that the Bernie camp, and especially the hardcore Bernie camp, but also the people that are just slowly coming towards his side, the real casual Bernie fans, mm-hmm. are just like, well, that if you're so good, Hillary, then tell us how you're better than him. Don't just tell us that he's bad and that he needs to go away. That's not helping your case any.
Yeah. Give us some new ideas.
Yeah.
Show us that you have foresight.
And this whole thing has seen a new thing I saw break on the internet this week. I don't know how new it is, but it circulated across my dash this week, and I'm not nearly as dedicated a politics follower as y'all are. So the fact that it came to a casual political person says something that people have been running the numbers, people in the Bernie camp have been running the numbers of if he goes independent,
mm-hmm.
how he will trash her.
Yeah, but he can't.
In the general, because the general works different from the primaries, that he will trash yeah. Hillary in the general if he goes independent.
If he could possibly get on the ballot as an independent, yeah.
But the ballot also has a write-in option.
That's the important part I was about to mention.
And the grassroots, you know, Bernie's people have already been spreading the word out there. It's a write-in option. It's legal. It's everywhere. They can't stop you. Write his name in.
Right. They can't stop you, but they can certainly ignore it. And
no, they can't.
We've seen so much voter fraud. I bet they can.
Legally, they cannot. They still have to chart it and put it in there.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, they'll try. But if they do suppress it, they're gonna have riots on their hands. I mean, I really believe that is how this election cycle is going. It's getting that bad. If they that blatantly ignore the will of the people, there's going to be riots in the streets. People are tired of this shit. It's getting bad already. There's been huge marches. There have been arrests. It's all over the place. The lid is off now. The can of worms is open. They can't ignore it forever.
I would like to believe that, but I can't. I don't think it's going to happen that way.
We can hope, but there is a bit of the cynic in me that goes,
yeah,
we still have to deal with the people.
I graduated from a university that Nixon felt comfortable talking to during the Watergate scandal.
Yeah.
Yes, but who are the greatest grassroots Bernie supporters? People of color. Who is not afraid to take up arms because they've had to do it?
Actually, as far as the people of color supporting Bernie, I have sources that say that that's exactly wrong. That the biggest supporters, you know, as far as people of color are concerned, they're in the Clinton pocket.
That has got to be a lie because the Clintons treat people of color like trash.
The problem is it's entirely true because of what Bill did during the 90s and all the good fortune and good favor that was built from that.
She's riding on that.
I don't believe it because I have.
I will bring you the numbers because unfortunately I have to say
I don't believe it. I don't believe those numbers. I want to know where they're getting their numbers from because every single person I've talked to fucking hates her and it's everywhere. I'm on the streets talking to people, and it's everywhere. People of color hate the fucking Clintons.
Georgia.
I'm not just talking about Florida. I'm talking about everywhere I've got friends. No one likes them.
But Mike, those are your friends. You're in the bubble.
No, I am not
okay.
in the bubble.
Okay.
I am asking anyone and everyone. I want all the information I can hear on the street because I don't trust mainstream sources. I don't trust them anymore. I want word of mouth because word of mouth is the best publicity you can get. Everyone knows that.
Let me send you over to a friend's page, and he will definitely go all day on saying how Bernie has blown it with the black vote and how it's all about Hillary. And it comes down, I've asked him, and I was like, wait, why? I'm trying to understand this. Can you tell me why? Because I'm just a white cracker. I don't understand this. Because from everything that I see, he's completely on your side. You know, walking in the marches, always looking out for civil rights, you know, all of it. It's there. It's in paper. But apparently, Bernie hasn't been pandering to them enough, whereas the Clintons have. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
Yeah, Bernie's
it's the what have you done for me lately? Have you been in the streets?
Single sections.
Yeah. Have you been in the streets? Have you been walking the hood? Have you been, you know, shaking the hands and knowing the struggle and sitting down in the barbershops and things like that? Because that's what the argument was coming down to. And I'm like, wow, it's just coming down to pandering. That's really all you want. You don't want to see the real activist movements that he's done. You know, the things that he's actually accomplished. That doesn't matter? Apparently not.
The Republican Party exists because of pandering.
Yeah. So, I really wish that was not the case. But unfortunately, Mike, that's what's on the street. You're muted.
See, I'm hearing completely different things. I don't buy it for a second.
I was also hearing completely different things, but he's outside my bubble.
I don't buy it for a second is because white people have been doing this to people of color for years. They've been coming down on the streets and saying, hey, yeah, I'm one of you. I'm just like you. We can identify. And then they go up to the hill and treat them like shit.
Yes.
Why would these people fall for that same lie over and over again? It doesn't make any sense.
I remember back when the Clintons were actually – when Bill was elected the first time, and I remember – a lot of the major people in the black community, one of the things they were saying, one of the things they were chanting on the hill and everywhere they could, was that Bill Clinton was the first black president. And that still resonates today, sadly.
Well, at the time, he was doing some pretty good things. It wasn't until he got into office that he's turned into a dickbag, and even then, not until his second term. He did all right for a while.
Yeah, but that's the reputation that she's still riding on.
Yeah.
Except that she doesn't have that reputation. She doesn't have that reputation.
It's the name Clinton.
Yeah.
It's association.
Let's take a look at the election cycle. Hey, I hate to bring up more time, but...
It's fine.
She
this is the show, man.
She was doing terribly, awfully in those first couple of races. And during that first part of her campaign, Bill was hands-off. But soon as she started floundering, all of a sudden,
Then he's doing illegal things.
And then Bill started pulling out and doing stuff for her.
Yeah.
Because he was quiet that first part of the election cycle. That very first part, we heard nothing about him. But then he started campaigning for her hard. And in pretty much every place that she has won in double digits, he's been campaigning there.
Yeah. Yes, he has jumped into the campaign too. But even despite him throwing his name into the ring, Bernie's movement is still growing, and the margin between them is still smaller, which is more telling to me than anything. Because even with his power behind him, and I have no particular problems with Bill Clinton as a president. There were some things he did that I liked. There were some things that he did that I didn't like. I know that he was before my time as far as voting age is concerned. So I don't, you know, but I've got no problem with the guy as a president. I think as a person, he's kind of a dick because of the whole scandal, but whatever. That's not the point. Point is, as a president, he was all right, I think. But even after him, who is, you know, he's a big Democratic golden boy. No one's denying that. He throws his name in the ring, and Bernie's still gaining on Clinton? That's compelling.
Yeah, he's gaining. But the thing is, he's gaining after some of those primaries have already happened.
Yes,
so,
but
unfortunately,
that's still
that gain doesn't,
compelling.
Well, that gain doesn't help him get the office, but it does help in the overall movement. And now
it teaches us something about the whole political climate. The fact that that big name, isn't helping her pull away.
But she actually has more baggage than Bill.
It's true.
That's the thing. And I will give this to Bill 100%. He has that charisma when he's in a room. He will make you feel like you're the only person in the room and there may be 10,000 people there. He has that ability, and he has the ability to get a room in the palm of his hand.
Charisma is not a dumpstead.
No. Hillary has the charisma of, well, no, that slime mold was actually far more charming.
Oh, you're insulting the slime mold.
Yeah. I'm sorry, slime mold. I am deeply sorry for my words.
I have to say that she is a polished speaker. She stands on the podium well, and she can present herself very well. She's very articulate. She has a breadth of experience to bring to the discussion, and she can pivot real quick, real easy. It's a practice motion for her. So if you get her into a speaking engagement with a lot of people, she will play the room. She's got plenty of experience doing that.
Yeah, but she does not argue well, and she's not easily likable.
That's true. But then every time she falls back on the woman card, you know, I hate to say that Trump is right in that. She is playing the woman card a lot. In fact, she actually said it as much in one of the debates. It's like, well, I'm the only one here with a uterus. You know, basically that. She's got a lot of issues, but it's not stopping her.
No. Because she's got an established political machine backing her.
Yeah, she's been groomed for this for a long time. The road has already been paved with her good intentions. And you know where that analogy goes.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of...
So public bathrooms.
Speaking of that analogy, let's go into bad ideas. but first, real quick... never mind. Screw the break. Because we're already running long. Technically, we could drop these and still have a full show.
Yeah.
We could. So maybe we should burn through them real fast?
Let's roll them out.
If we can.
Let's go.
Okay. So Tennessee has the governor signed into law. Let me pull this up. Where did it go?
Got 5 minutes. Let's go.
rapid fire. It's the bad. We don't
Lightning
need to spend
round.
That much time on it, right? Okay, Tennessee governor signs discriminatory law allowing therapists to refuse treatment to LGBTQ patients.
Once again, covering it under the strictly held principles ideology.
Yeah. But thanks to the Hippocratic Oath, can they?
Do no harm's kind of really, you know, not a gray area.
Also, I do not know actually if therapists are required or do take the Hippocratic Oath.
A
I know
doctor
do, but...
who has taken the Hippocratic Oath cannot refuse treatment to a patient.
A doctor,
therapist that does not has not necessarily taken the Hippocratic Oath, and it may fall under the blanket already that private businesses have of the right to refuse service to anybody. So all that this law is really doing is just putting out there that you're an asshole.
The area where it goes into is
psychiatry.
Where you actually have to have a medical degree.
Wait a second here. As the article here states, quote, as a professional, I should have the right to decide if my client's end goals don't match with my beliefs. I should have the right to say somebody else can better serve them, Governor Haslam said in a phone interview with the Associated Press. Lawyers can do that. Doctors can do that. why would we take this one class of professionals and say you can't do that? That's from an uninformed position, because doctors can't do that.
Typically, a lawyer will do that going, I don't cover that section of the law. This guy's a better specialist. Doctors would go, I'm not a specialist in that. You should go see this neurologist over here.
Yeah, I mean, lawyers can recuse themselves from a case for, you know, any number of reasons. You know, so some of which it's like, I'm sorry, I can't do your divorce because I'm the one that's screwing your wife. That has happened. And somebody was disbarred because they did not recuse themselves in that case.
Wow.
But it came up later.
But no, this is – a psychiatrist is in fact a doctor. If I could be wrong, but they prescribe drugs.
Yeah, if you are a psychiatrist, can write prescriptions. They have to have a medical license.
But a psychologist
cannot and does not necessarily have to have one.
Yeah,
they are licensed, but they're not necessarily doctors.
Yeah, and that's where the line is.
Yeah,
and then of course there's religious therapists.
The Hippocratic Oath,
otherwise known as quacks.
Well, they're trying to treat somebody that that would do these therapy sessions as if they're a priest, you know, who would then be, you know, looking at them through a confessional, you know, somebody that, you know, you'd go, you're having issues at home or, you know, with getting right with yourself and Lord knows what else. And then you go to your pastor or your reverend or your clergy and you talk to them through it and you get on that right path. That's what they're thinking, I think.
So they're trying to equate the two.
You know, they're not seeing a mental health issue as an actual physical problem. I think that's where it comes down.
Oh, look, par for the course.
Yeah. But that's my speculation. Yeah. I don't know really what they're thinking, but...
No, it makes perfect sense because they see everything through God-tinted glasses, and if it doesn't, and if it's not part of God, then it is evil and must be destroyed.
Yeah, and we can say with some assurity that it is the God-tinted glasses because of the reasons that they're giving for it. You know, it's that sincerely held religious belief. It's like, well, I guess you played the God card then. And there it is, the God card.
I'm getting really tired of that card. I don't even want them to put it back in the deck anymore. I just want them to tear it up.
Every time it goes back in the deck, it multiplies. There's more of them in the deck every time.
Eventually, it'll be banned from tournament play. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving right along from that, now that we know what they're all about, let's go to Alabama. Oh, wait, let's not go to Alabama.
No, please.
Ever.
No.
Yeah, a pee-at-home bill, basically. Religious extremists are and doomed Republican presidential candidates, Senator Ted Cruz, recently said that transgender Americans shouldn't be allowed to use public bathrooms at all. And now a town in Alabama has turned that bigoted talking point into law. The City Council of Oxford, Alabama, has just unanimously approved an ordinance that effectively bans trans citizens from using any public bathroom that doesn't match the sex noted on their birth certificate. Unanimous. So Oxford, Tennessee, I mean Alabama.
Alabama.
Is off the list of tourist destinations. So there's more bans going on, not travel bans, but
travel advisory.
Yeah, more travel advisories and more businesses that are boycotting North Carolina, you know, for HB2. You know, it's
still again,
going.
We actually got he who does not politicize, Michael Jordan, to come out against HB2.
Yeah. To finally have him actually come out on something, anything, is monumental.
Yeah.
CNN's health section reports that Americans urinate anywhere from 4 to 7 times a day. The ordinance is effectively a criminalization of basic bodily functions and places an undue burden on trans citizens who must now find a private bathroom to relieve themselves. It is a monstrous waste of time and energy over a contrived and baseless fear-mongering campaign that attempts to demonize trans Americans as deviants and predators. The timing of the ordinance is supremely ironic, considering that former Speaker of the House Dennis Hassert just received 15 months in prison over improper disbursement of hush money to his molestation victims.
Yep.
I don't think we really need to talk about him, because I don't want to give him any more airtime, other than he should have had a much more severe sentence.
The judge might give him a more severe sentence, but because of sentence guidelines and for what he was actually able to be convicted of.
Yeah.
Because statute of limitations.
There really shouldn't be a statute of limitations on child molestation.
There really shouldn't be.
That is one of those laws where the statute of limitations is determined state by state. I did some recent research on this. Murder, there is no statute of limitations regardless of state. But unfortunately, child sexual contact, things like that, it is a state by state decision. Whether or not it is, you know, there is a term or there is not, and unfortunately the state where he did it in, there was a limit.
Shocking. Simply shocking. Not at all. Mama Van asks, are we supposed to carry our birth certificates now? I know. Yeah. I don't carry my birth certificate. In fact, any time that I have to do giant paperwork, I usually have to go order a new copy because I've lost the darn thing. So, yeah, that's...
The only reason I know where mine is because Jess made me. I mean...
See? Yeah.
Just get a fire safe, put it in there, problem solved.
Yep.
I'll lose the entire safe. That's what happens. You know, I'll move
and
it just...
With the amount of crap you have in your house, I wouldn't be surprised.
Silence.
Never.
Okay. So let's move to another state that should not be in the union anymore, as far as I'm concerned. Oklahoma court, oral sex is not rape if the victim is unconscious from drinking.
Because consent's not important.
This is a case that involved a 17-year-old boy assaulted a 16-year-old girl after giving her a ride home, and there had been lots of drinking involved. The thing that gets me is that the trial judge threw out the case. An appeals court backed up that ruling, and it was stated, and I quote from the article, "Forcible sodomy cannot occur where a victim is so intoxicated as to be completely unconscious at the time of the sexual act of oral copulation." AKA, if you are drunk and you blackout drunk, it's consent. That's sadly the best way to describe that.
Forcible sodomy.
It's not rape if they can't resist.
Not in Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
So, what I'm hearing is, folks, don't live in Oklahoma. Ever.
I say we just nuke the state from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
No reason to nuke the state that's filled with serial killers.
There's hardly
there is that.
There's hardly anyone there. I think more of a tactical strike would be more appropriate.
Just carpet vomit?
No. Snipers. Snipers.
Oh, but that, come on, that's no fun. At least bring in a Hercules.
No, I just say we give the land back to the Native Americans, let them have it. They can clean it out.
Oh yeah, yeah. Let indigenous Americans take care of the problem for you.
You know, we're gonna go back to the old treaty and expand the reservation to, I don't know, something the size of Oklahoma.
Like exactly the size of Oklahoma. Like you can just have Oklahoma.
Maybe a little bit of Texas, we'll see, but right now just Oklahoma.
Maybe Alabama, maybe Tennessee. You know what? Take it all back. Just take it all. So I don't... How can someone this... Fuming, mad, angry. There are flames coming out my ears.
Well, careful. That was a nice headset you've got there.
It's okay. It's fireproof. It's got to be fireproof.
For this show? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's say that this is a call for the legislature to change the statute, which is entirely out of step with what other states have done in this area and what Oklahoma should do. She said it creates a huge loophole for sex abuse that makes no sense. Yeah, I have to agree with that. You can find the links for this, and you too can go absolutely insane by taking a look at it and write their Congress. You know, see what you can do. Find the judge. Send him a postcard of jail bars or something.
Contact the ACLU in the area.
Or cartoons of forcible drunken sodomy.
Yep.
I could get behind that, maybe. Yeah. Okay. That's it. That's all the bad news. Yeah. Yeah. You see, the bad actually goes pretty quick because it's so exasperating that we have nothing to say about it. The headline is just so, it's like, what is there even to talk about? This is all wrong.
Rage.
Yeah, pure rage. Just rage. So it's funny. We got a lot of traction on the good talking about how bad the good was. So, yeah, you never know how these things are going to go. Anywho, let's go into personal picks. I've been playing with something that was actually helping out the show, and that is called BlueStacks. So I want to show right now. There we go. So this is BlueStacks. It is an Android emulator for your computer. So it will allow you to do all sorts of things. Oh, no. Apparently, I have to actually pay for it now.
Or, oh no! You just download an app.
Oh, I don't think I'm going to do that.
No, but see, here's the thing. The thing about it: you download one of the apps, you don't even have to activate the damn thing. It just has to sit on the system for a day, and then you can delete them. I do it all the time.
Just for a day, and then you delete it.
And then I delete them. Do it all the time.
Well, that's one thing to do. I'm not going to do that right now, because I don't like those apps. Those don't look so good. So I'm going to remove this from my picks and move right along. Anyway, it'll allow you to play Android games or Android apps. I had an app that I was using to play the soundboard for things for the show. So you can build it and do whatever. Because sometimes they build apps so well and so easy to use. The ease of use is so much better on some of these phone apps than it is on your own computer. And it's like, I just want that. Can't I have that on this? That's all I want to do. I just want to, you know, like adjust parallax on a picture. You know, those scanning applications where you take the picture of a document and then you can put a binding box around and, you know, straighten it all up and it does everything nice. To try and do that on your computer, you have to download, like, you know, a $300 Adobe program, which is ridiculous. So sometimes for those applications, when you absolutely have to have it on your computer, or you just maybe you're an iPhone person, but there are some Android apps that you really want to use. Maybe your company has an Android app that you also are supposed to use to do something. And yeah, it's handy that way, or any number of reasons. BlueStacks, it's mostly free, and available for finer platforms everywhere. And it just sits there and it just works. You do have to kind of play with the scrolling a little bit. If you use your scroll wheel, it really goes kind of wonky and weird on you. If you happen to have a touchscreen monitor, then it's even better. It's fantastic that way because it acts just like a giant tablet. Otherwise, you just kind of click and drag the screen however you need, and it works. So BlueStacks, I'll put a link in the show notes, and you can find it out there. Let's see. Steven, you've got The Court and the Cross, the religious rights crusade to reshape the Supreme Court. Well, gee, that's a nice read.
Actually, as you see, I'm still reading it. A friend of mine, actually, the person whose house I'm currently in, is the one who's letting me borrow this book, and it literally goes through basically the entire history of the Supreme Court and how various more and more extreme right-wing religious people have tried to shape this country through the courts to reflect their personal religious views. And this goes back, I mean, it's incredibly well researched, it's incredibly well written. I will admit, because it talks a lot about court cases and actually goes through names and times, it is a little dry. But it is fascinating and great information to get if you want to know what happened, how long this has been going on, because it basically, since the Supreme Court was formed, this has been going on in this country. It's just gotten worse recently, basically since the 60s and 70s. Everyone will be familiar with Falwell and the Moral Majority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it gets really conflated and really massive. Really inflated, I should say, really massive. But it's been going on since way back in the day. They even go into the court cases about putting In God We Trust on the money. So it covers all that and how that all came about. So no, it's a really fascinating read. I'm still in the middle of going through it, and it is a book that I highly recommend. So to, again, forewarned is forearmed, and this will tell you exactly what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Well, look at this. I've got 5 Audible credits, and it's available for audiobook, and I am buying that right now.
Also, if you want to get it, the hardback copy is currently on sale used for 1 cent.
That's nice, too.
So I have the paperback version, which my friend let me borrow, which is the slightly updated version.
Hardcover from 1 cent.
Of course, you're paying like $2.99 or $3.99 shipping.
Oh,
but
I'm sure, yeah.
It's still a cent.
So hardcover.
You click on where it says 15 used.
Oh, yes. It's $3.99 shipping.
Yep.
Which is like the book rate, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a bad thing to have lying about either. Especially if you need to go reference. It's like, wait, when was that? And then you can pull it out. Good for the reference shelves. Interesting. So this, it was out in hardcover in 2008, but really a lot of this information does not exactly go stale. They've been doing the same thing for a long
time.
No, and
the paperback, let me get to their page here.
It was 2009. It was like just a year later or something. Let's see. Paperback.
Looks like it might also have been
2009. June 2009.
Yeah, it has a little bit slight updated information, but not much in comparison. I mean, but it's an excellent read. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and they also have it out on Kindle, but amazingly enough, for only 1 cent less than the paperback. So, I don't know. Kindle ebook pricing is just like, why? Why does it cost exactly the same much as the Dead Tree edition?
Mm-hmm.
Because the publishers want all that money.
Pretty much.
That's all it comes down to.
Yeah, but
yeah, get an Audible, get a paperback, get a hardback, get a Kindle if you need it, but get it and read it.
I really like Audible for these things that are really thick to go through, because otherwise I'll never make it through because I'll just be so tired I won't be able to actually sit and read it. But with all my commuting and the driving that I do, Audible, I can just kind of let them drone on about that, and it's like, oh wait, no, I'll tune back in automatically to the good bits.
Fair enough.
So it works really well for me. So I'll have a book report at some point.
Excellent. We'll compare notes.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Okay, let's see. And we got Daniel, you've got one. What is this? It's a blog.
This is the 4th annual International Tabletop Day.
International Tabletop Day. Woohoo! Okay.
This is when you're supposed to get together with friends, family, neighbors, and play board games.
And it is tomorrow.
Yep. Fantastic. I know that I'm having a nice little festivity at my domicile in honor of it. But it's a great time to try new games, try old games, spend time with friends. I know Geek and Sundry, a Twitch channel and site of its own accord, have been pushing Tabletop Day for years now. They're going to have a ton of programming on their Twitch channel, but also I know a number of game stores, comic book shops that all are celebrating Tabletop Day.
Fantastic.
So look for stores in your area, talk to your friends, have a gather, have some fun.
And if you're not in the capital region, there are plenty of events going on worldwide. Check out the event locator on the official International Tabletop Day page. And that is out at Geek and Sundry. So find a community event near you. Hashtag tabletop day. So, oh my gosh, that's a lot of flags. That's a lot of pins in that Google map there. So good stuff. I am going to play some board games, I believe, tomorrow. So that will be a good time. And Michael, did you have anything?
I do not have anything for you this week.
Okie dokie. I believe then we are at an end, gentlemen. Do you have anything to plug? Last minute?
Nope.
Okay. Alrighty then. That's it for tonight. We'll be back next Friday about 9:30 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, conversations continue on the web. Head over to orillyradio.com. That's orillyradio.com for all the links right at the top of the page. And do watch us live and chat with us on the Twitch channel. If you have liked what we've done here, you can help keep the lights on. You can follow the Patreon link on the webpage and go over to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N. Or if that ongoing subscriptions and things like that aren't your thing, you can also donate directly via the cleverly named donate button right on the page. Of course, also, if you don't want to contribute with money, completely understand. How about mentally with topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, unsolicited advice, whatever you happen to have, email them over to us at orillyradiopodcast@gmail.com and leave a voicemail at 470-222-ORLY-6759. And the most important thing, we need some reviews. Go leave us a review on whatever platform you found us on, and of course, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, subscribe to the YouTube channel, the Twitch channel, and share the show with your friends and neighbors and relatives and all those fun things, and we can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. Music for the show was created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com. Great guy. Thank you very much for all of your royalty-free music, as long as I mention your name. And that does it for us tonight. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
And the broadcast has been successfully terminated.
It's in the can.
It is. Thank you, gentlemen.